Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and I'm so excited today to have Dr. Denise Berger on my show today. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Denise.
So this is another Dr. Denise, everyone. So
yeah, we have two Dr. Denises in the house.
My doppelganger. Okay, so can you, I'm so excited because I know you and we're so in synchronicity. So can you just start with maybe a little introduction as to who you are and your background and your doctor education? Maybe that'll help everyone to distinguish the different Dr. Denises.
Sure. Yeah. In fact, my doctorate is different than yours. I have an organizational leadership doctorate of education from Pepperdine University. I actually started my career in corporate Fortune 500 business. And I ran a group that handled the overseas risk management needs for all the Fortune 500 companies. And at that time, I went and also received my MBA in marketing and international business. And that was in New York City. Around 2006, we moved to California. And I morphed over to running the Women's International Network for the company under our diversity and inclusion strategy at the time. And I was also part of an accelerate program for the top 50 women globally in the company. And I noticed that many of the people that were running that program had doctorates. So I thought, maybe I should look into this. And the stars really aligned for me. There was a program right in my backyard on organizational leadership focused on women, global citizenship. And it was a hybrid program, and I was able to do my dissertation and complete the program in 3.5 years. So I signed up, and that's how I ended up where I am.
Well, I think what's so important, and I'm like, wow, I'm just listening to the whole pathway and the twists and turns that got you here onto the show today. And so much of what I talk about is different ways that we can talk, think, and act about mental health. And I think the reason why I wanted to let you know that I'm so excited to have you is I talk a lot about awareness, self-love, and altruism in establishing mental health for individuals as well as for collective audiences, meaning whether it's athletes, corporations, it's all that, you know, when individuals thrive, we all thrive. And I think your path to you and I having this discussion today, I think we're in alignment. And I think, well, I would love for you maybe to share with everyone about how you've invited me to be a part of your lecture. And maybe that's really like a parallel process of what we're going to jump into next.
Yes. Right now I consult with organizations on their strategic plan, their culture, their vision, mission, and values. And I'm a professor at Pepperdine in a graduate program for social entrepreneurship and change. And so, Denise, you know, I've invited you out to guest lecture in my leadership course. Around building higher consciousness and compassion. What does compassion look like? And to have that real, authentic conversation with these scholars who are going to embark on changing the world for the better. That is what they hope to do. And they need all the skills and tools under their belt to help them succeed as leaders.
Yes. And I want to say what was so cool about being a guest in your classroom is I love the way the students think. I think that the age group, the millennial age group, and the bridge that you're creating with your body of work, your business knowledge, your desire to be a change maker, I was very impressed at the way you led the bridge discussions about how to integrate these concepts of compassion. And then you've shared with me some of the other people. Maybe you could give us an idea of other people you've invited into your classroom and how you've inspired your students to go out into the world with this knowledge.
Yeah. Well, I looked at our leadership curriculum a couple years ago, and I revamped it to follow a model that I developed called collaborative intelligence. I believe that in the spirit of, you know, altruism and making the world a better place, we can't do it alone. We have to collaborate. And there's lots of evidence of projects out there that require multi-stakeholder collaboration, and they fail despite all the best organization and project management horsepower behind them. And what I've determined is that they fail because the people, individuals, have not actually been given all the leadership skill sets that they can have to be good collaborators. And it doesn't make them bad people. I know that in business school, we don't really focus on leadership development. You might have a course in it, but it's not an entire 360-degree view and learning around what it means to be a good leader, what it means to be a good collaborator. So my curriculum is based on collaborative intelligence, and it includes all of the relational intelligences, emotional, social, cultural, moral. It includes systems thinking. It includes growth mindset. It includes learning and exploration. So I have had guest lectures on mindfulness in the class. I have taken my class to an escape room, which is a great framework for learning about what you do under stress and how you communicate under stress and how you can be more aware of that. I've had improv professionals come in, and we do improv as a group together, all designed to build that muscle strength of being open to possibilities, being open to learning and growth, being open to listening and self-awareness, in addition to the hard skills of leadership, which are more of the traditional ones, like being able to make a decision.
So I'm hearing so many words and so much alignment and the resiliency factor. And so how do individuals, how in a business setting, do individuals thrive and then the collective thrives? But then that even has, it has a rippling effect in more ways. And I think all the layers of what you've just discussed, it sounds like you've been showing by example the different speakers that you have. And you also call upon your past work as a leader in corporate America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think the business world, you know, we were all trained when I was entry level to leave your personal person at home and bring your work face to work and, you know, no emotions, just business. Don't have fun at work. Just get your work done. If you're having fun, you must not be productive. You must, you know, the thinking was you weren't being productive. And I'm here to say that's absolutely incorrect, in that, for example, play has been studied by Stuart Brown as a key component to learning, growth, to productivity, to enjoying your job, which makes you then produce more, be more successful, be more engaged at your work and bring your A game to work. And so when I was working in New York, there were so many people that operated under that old traditional model, and they were stuffy and they were unengaged with those around them, and they certainly weren't collaborative. It was definitely dog-eat-dog world. And the one example that really comes to mind for me was that we were all in 9/11, and I was on the 103rd floor of the tower, and I survived, but my boss didn't. And I had to step in his shoes. And about 6 months later, after we had all regained our footing and we ended up in temporary office space, the company brought in a therapist for us to use at our discretion. Well, nobody wanted to go see the therapist. They all went within their cubicles or offices and like hid back there and kind of like went introverted, went into themselves. They didn't want to share what they were feeling or thinking as an individual or even as a collective. But I forced my group to do a lunch every week and group therapy with the therapist. And it was one of the most profound and best decisions that I've ever made, because we healed and we processed as a group, which is what we needed to do. I mean, individually, I'm sure many of us were in therapy but as a group, we needed to figure out how we get on with this devastating, tragic event that happened. Because we're a team and we needed to be able to collaborate. Hiding individually in our offices and doing our individual work was not going to bring our full strength back to the table.
Dr. Denise, so I just feel like what you just shared is so profound. I want to make sure we have the integrity of just honoring all those who passed away during 9/11. Heavy, it's heavy. It's real. It rocked our country, but you were there. You were there. And so it's unbelievable how sufferings or losses or traumatic events can influence us to take a look at what really matters, in your day-to-day life. And the people you often spend the most time with are the people at your office. Even sometimes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So that.
For sure.
So that probably, I think I've been talking about paradigm progression, and I'm just thinking I can't even imagine a more profound example in the corporate world to survive 9/11 and to be there with your colleagues and to have lost someone and to go back to work. And how does that, you can hear in my voice, I just have a lot of like love and care and compassion. I'm so glad that you survived. And
thank you. Yeah, it brought us, it definitely brought us together rather than bringing us down.
Mm-hmm.
But it was work and it required, really compassion. It required the compassionate side of me in my leadership abilities. And I, in corporate America, I tended to be more of like the very organized, very diligent, very responsible, always thinking about how I can develop the people around me and bring out their full potential methodically. 9/11 developed my compassion muscle for sure.
I was just about to say that. And that is no coincidence as to what we're about to talk about next. It sounds like this traumatic event inspired you and gave yourself permission to integrate emotional well-being, altruism, social consciousness, social responsibility into the workplace with your colleagues, and you process and healed through 9/11. But it sounds like the healing part, of course, we always miss those who've lost their life too. So we can't ever even, like, words can't even describe that. That's why I wanted to pause. But in the present day, I think when we go into our suffering, I look at things as crisis, stabilization, and thrive. We all go through times in life, whether it's a divorce, a loss of a job, people passing away. There's cycles that we all go through as human beings. And I often talk about how when we're in the crisis part, that's also the potential when we're going through a suffering. It's the potential for the most energy, the most change, the most transformation. And it sounds like your description, you went into the suffering. You did the work as a group. You did the group therapy. You had difficult discussions. And it seems like that's what's landed you into this, your continued evolving desire to integrate that message of social responsibility, compassion, multidimensional well-being into the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, my group and I had one among many sort of epiphanies, but our boss had two young kids and he had been traveling a lot. And right before he died on 9/11, he had said, "Oh, my traveling's going to come to an end. I'm so excited. I get to spend more time with my family." And so that led all of us to sort of make a vow to ourselves that we would never let work-life balance get so out of whack. And so I think about every day, am I living up to why my life is still here and others are not? You know, am I doing all that I can to make the most of my life? And so that contributed to me wanting to study corporate social responsibility and think about how we can bring together business with, kind of that conscious capitalism mentality. Where business can be a force for good and be profitable at the same time. We need businesses to be profitable too. If they all go out of business, then there's no economy, right? So society needs an economy needs society. We're all very intertwined that way. So we need businesses to be doing good for the world. We also need them to be doing well in their results and financially.
Very well said. And I was thinking that the bridge discussion about compassion, Dr. Denise had me discuss on many different, like, I think I've been to your Pepperdine guest lecture, I think 4 times. One of the events, thank you so much for bringing all your students. I had this event just to show you how aligned she and I are, called Compassion in Action. And I think that is the really big way that we are very aligned. And at that event, my Dharma brother, Lama Tenzin Shigal, came, he presented. He's a Buddhist monk who is in India. And I think, I don't know to date, it might be 31 or 32. He's rescued and helped over 31 to 32 people off the Himalaya Mountains. There's people in villages,
children. Some of them with disabilities.
Yes. And so I was having an event where his organization, the CED House, he's very, very grateful because in that part of the world, of the children that he rescued, he started this in 2001. We'll put a link to the article about him. However, he has about 80% of them are women. And so what's really interesting about that is Denise Berger, who I'm speaking with, it's such an interesting, now even as I'm here on the just talking with you, there's so much alignment because that the whole idea of women empowerment and Lama Tenzin Shigal in India is making big change with regard to the way women's roles are. And he's very grateful to the West. 95% of the money is raised. We had an event called Compassion in Action and you brought your class there. And Lama Tenzin talks of womanity, and he also is compassion without borders or without any boundaries. And so I think that that is you, myself, and Lama Tenzin. I think there's a real unified mission about compassion and service. And so that sort of is an interesting start point. Maybe you met him. I have so much to say about him, but maybe you could just describe the essence of how much you respect him. And then we can talk about kind of a joint passion that we're doing to help support that vision and mission in India.
Yeah. Well, the thing that struck me about Lama Tenzin was that he has a very good business mind. Like, he is methodical, which I appreciate from the business side of me. And so he leads from a place of what is practical, what is doable, what is achievable, what is realistic. In the business world, you know, we measure outcomes in SMART, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound. And I think he thinks like that while he is an example of such extreme compassion and really giving the gift of life to people, mostly kids, who largely would be abandoned by their families or their community, and would have no hope. And he's figured out a way to house them, to educate them. And now he's working on a plan to change the way society views some women's needs. And he's also looking at developing business opportunities for them to be employed right where they live, using modern day technology. So he's a very, I was impressed with how forward thinking and business minded he is, in addition to his soul being so of this higher consciousness, and frankly, a state that we should all be so lucky to achieve.
Yeah. And so I just want to also add, a lot of the children at the CED house, and I've been there twice. So I think a lot of times when people talk about orphanages or different people, they were like, wait, is this person real? Is this person? And he's actually very practical about that. When you donate or help the beautiful orphanage in any way, he encourages people, if you're in India, to come visit. You can have meals with them. I'm very close to the kids. And when I was there in Dharamshala, after I gave my lecture at His Holiness Tibetan Medical Society, I spent time in Dehradun, India at the CED house. I know the children very well. And I was on the bus with him, picking them up from school. I taught them how to swim. And they taught me so much about love and integrity. And they actually practice meditation. And Lama, at the very front of the orphanage, it says, all castes and all genders are welcome here. And so that essence of that oneness and community and love and wisdom, you can feel the energy. It's just palpable about how they greet you, how there's so much love. And many of their parents, because I did interview each of them, I have not released that, but they wanted to share their story with me. And so some of their parents, Lama asked permission, because they live up in villages in the upper Dolpal region of the Himalayas, and their parents knew these are villages where there's no electricity, no water, and, you know, the kids missed their parents, but some of their parents gave permission because they trusted Lama that he was going to help them be educated so they could give back to their villages. And so he's creating an infrastructure that really is the ripple effect. And two of the girls, mm-hmm. the oldest, there's like the four that he says are in charge now. When I was there last fall, the age was 24 months to, I think, age 24. And two of the girls were in law school. One's going to be a judge in Nepal. And he has taught them, speaking of practical, he has taught them how to manage money, what kind of food and meal planning. And at the front of the orphanage, I'm going to call it home. It really feels like a home. At the front of their home, they actually have a little shop. So he's integrated ways to, like, the locals come and get fresh produce, different products. So he has a business model that is in, like, he's got compassion in action, and he's got all those variables that I think you've probably addressed in your dissertation. He's like the living example of that.
He is really, truly a social entrepreneur. And, you know, we should get him to come and guest lecture with you, Denise, at my class next time, because that would be really cool to hear from him for a different reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Than the one that we have you.
Absolutely.
You know, because he's got that business mind. It's amazing what he's been able to put together that is very enterprising.
Yes, and I think what's really cool, and that segues into more about you, is that when you were doing this amazing course and you're bridging all of your interests, that inspired you. And I'd love to just hear about how you, the founder of Aleeky Designs, how that evolved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I teach entrepreneurship, and I've always had in the back of my mind the thought that I really should take my own advice and be an entrepreneur myself and experience what that's like. I don't ever like to be the academic ivory tower type. I like to ground all of my theories and lessons in practical application. And the business of jewelry making presented itself while I was in Greece. I'm half Greek, so I go every summer. And I just came across these bracelets that I love. They have a unique clasp, and they're cord bracelets, and you can wear them all the time, but the cords don't drape down off the clasp. They're fitted. So I really have been listening to the universe on this one. At every step I've taken with this business, I feel that there's like an energy that's pushing me forward with it, and kind of making me take the next step.
So when you're saying that, though, I'm hearing that I like to talk about the awareness, the self-love, and the altruism, but then there's also the discernment and how do we listen to our inner voice? How do we follow our passion? How do you bridge your business skills, your compassion? And then I think I know from just knowing you sharing your routine, your workouts, like you live a holistic lifestyle as much as we, I know that if we, for 80 to 90% of the time, make good choices, we're in good health.
That's really all you can expect.
That's one way of talking about it.
No one ever achieves perfection.
Right, we don't know. I call it adaptive perfectionism. So it's cool, though, when I'm hearing you saying the energy. I think in order to get in that space where we can trust and listen to our inner voice, we, with humility and groundedness, look at the other times of suffering. We learn from like what worked, what didn't work. And then I think that's part of the maturity and the wisdom that we get over time. And it sounds like you're really tuning in to your inner voice.
I'm trying. I mean, it's funny because I got B's in art in elementary school. I mean, who gets B's in art in elementary school,
right? Me.
So I never.
Maybe that's another reason why we go along. I was like, how can I get A's in these other classes? And I'm doing like stick figures.
Doing awful. Me too. I was totally doing stick figures and, you know, monochromatic sunsets.
But I bet if we took an art class together, we'd wow ourselves now. So go ahead.
I don't know. I don't really inherently think of myself as artistic, but what I'm learning about myself is that I'm creative.
Yes.
And so that creativity is being allowed to play out in this jewelry business, Aleeky Designs, that I didn't ever think about because I never thought of myself as artistic. So that's, I think, an example of me kind of overcoming my own labels to listen to a wider perspective and kind of like let it flow and see what happens. But I'm doing it in a very, I'm trying to do it in a very conscious and mindful way that I'm not in a hurry. I want to be very like methodical about the steps I take so that I know that every step I take, I can handle it. Especially from the creativity standpoint.
Absolutely. So can you, I feel like this could be its own show, just everything about Aleeky Designs, because I'm so excited about your company. And can you get the core principles in your mind and the values that you, when you set out to evolve and develop and create this new, I don't even want to say business. It is, but it's way more than that. It's an extension of your desire to show people through your creativity, the desire to be the change and model the social entrepreneurship that you talk about.
Yeah, and everything is stages, for sure. And so that's one of the things that I, like I said, I'm trying to be very purposeful in each step I take and to grow with each like new phase of the business. And so one thing that I believe in is transparency, and I like to change conversations. So I know that a lot of businesses will tell consumers or their customers, well, we give 20% of proceeds to XYZ. And I started to think like, well, what are proceeds? Like, I, as your customer, don't know how much you're making, how much your expenses are. You could declare that your proceeds are zero, in which case then you're not giving anything to anyone. So my percentage that I give, and I call my program GIFT, giving it forward together, is always of the price you pay, so that it's complete transparency. And I partner with less than a handful of organizations to do a gift program through my various collections. One of those organizations that's part of the GIFT is Lama Tenzin's Orphanage. So it circles back to that through Aliki One, the Aliki One collection. And then I also am trying to keep packaging to a real simple minimum. And granted, when I first started my business, I thought, well, I'm not going to spend money on packaging because I don't have the money to spend. But then I started to think about it, and I see in stores how much packaging and boxes and ribbons and go into gifting, and then the gift itself is so small, and half those boxes and packages end up in landfill or recycling. And I thought, what's the point? Like, isn't the beauty in the actual product itself? Like, are we masking that? Or are we trying to compensate for a lack of something in this packaging when we should be just focused on the product itself? So I like to try to think of ways in corporate social responsibility theories or in that space of how we can change the conversation, or how what I do can be a conversation starter. I think that a lot of companies are well-intentioned with their social responsibility, but they sometimes don't really get what it means to do it truly authentically. And so it kind of becomes a marketing gimmick or good for PR, or, you know, the ones that are doing it falsely, it's definitely inauthentic. But I think there's a lot of good companies out there trying to do it the right way, and maybe they just haven't reached out to be fully educated. There's stages to it. Corporate social responsibility is not the type of thing where one day you decide you're going to turn on the switch and the lights come on and you're like, okay, we are corporately responsible now. It is definitely a continuous journey of growth and engaged learning.
Do we want to talk about the birthing of Aliki One? Because I think that's, you know, there's like compassion in action. I think there's like an inspirational vibration and how that unfolded.
Yeah.
Want to say thank you. I want to begin with a gratitude, because that's how I think that gratitude, starting our day, starting our conversation, but I want to say thank you to you. I'm always talking about mindfulness and how can we be more in the moment, whether someone picks their favorite song or if someone comes to see me and they're trying to change their thought pattern. I often tell people, one of my things that I like to do, a tool, is I have different bracelets, or when I was interviewed by Simina Aline, she's very into mindfulness, and she wanted me to sort of explain some of the integration of fashion that I do to keep myself grounded. And so I want to say thank you to you, because I gave myself sort of like a gift prior to going to speak in India. at His Holiness Body Mind Life Conference, but I also did it with intention because I have my logo is DNA strands, and I have them, 7 of them for awareness and intuition on my business card, but I have them in hologram form. And so everything that I envisioned and dreamed in 2014, when I wrote down a mission and vision of how can I get the messages out about changing the way we think, talk, and act with mental health, with children, with India, with the East meets West, this trip to India was a celebration of all those goals and the intentions I put out there into the greater world and universe. And so I want to say thank you, because when you had told me about your new company and your beautiful jewelry, I was like so excited for you because it was like a labor of love for you. But then you were kind enough to, I asked you if you could cast a DNA strand that sort of my vibrational frequency and bracelet. I wanted to go to India to sort of celebrate that was my version of the Super Bowl. Like that was my genitique was like my Super Bowl ring. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's such a great, it's unbelievable then how a leaky one's unfolded, but maybe you could sort of give some feedback or other, like the thing you need to know about her jewelry tool is everything. Maybe what you could do is read, like there's Genetiki in the Aliki One design. There's Saban. Can you tell about the line and maybe read? I don't know if you have the consciousness cards, but they have, there's a vibrational frequency I talk about with our thoughts, words, and actions. And this jewelry represents her intentions for higher consciousness. And that was in alignment with everything I envisioned and what I've been achieving. And so the birthing of the Aliki One line had to do with those intentions of education, inspiration, wisdom, social responsibility. And so it was just like one of those aha moments. I was more excited about Genetiki than I can even explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we probably gravitated to each other because Aliki's values are ones by Aristotle on creating an eudaimonia state, which is a flourishing society for all. And the values are truth, unity, love, and beauty. And so I think those align with, you know, your awareness, self-love, and altruism. Yes, in every piece that I do, I try to infuse a positive intention and a message that can be I hope is inspirational for the people wearing it. And I've had people buy Saban, for example, because of the message. And Saban's message, just as an example, the essence of Saban is the universe and universal presence. And the message reads, believing in the unlimited potential of the feminine energy, seeking universal inspiration for all people, imagining possibilities without boundaries, promoting unity and oneness in the universe.
And what I want to say about that is that I want to just pause and honor Lama Tenzin's vision and also His Holiness vision, because Denise and I, after the Genetiki, the idea and the inspiration was, wow, how can we bridge West meets East and the Aliki One for oneness? And then this particular bracelet, Saban, I believe was the first one that we thought about in what Lama Tenzin vision is for women and womanity. And I think, can you just read that again? Let's read Saban again, because it's really about the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm. Believing in the unlimited potential of the feminine energy, seeking universal inspiration for all people, imagining possibilities without boundaries, promoting unity and oneness in the universe.
I would love it if Lama was here. He would be smiling, but also very, very just proud, because he's so proud of his girls. And I think you are too. I mean, your heart in your journey of working with women in corporate America and raising cultural awareness. And so we could talk about each bracelet, but really we're talking about the energy vibration of the intention of the meanings. And so,
Yeah. And I hope to create that higher vibration. Unfortunately, a lot of our humanity lives at a lower consciousness state. And in a lot of cases, it's not even something that can be corrected in this lifetime, because of circumstances. However, you know, in our mindset, we can try to develop higher consciousness. And we do that through setting intentions, you know, and particularly positive intentions. Oh,
absolutely. If you look at whether it's Darwin or Aristotle, quantum physics, Deepak Chopra, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness training, everything starts with a thought, an intention, and a vibration. And so to me, this is what I love about the integration and the evolution of who you are and what you stand for with social responsibility. But your intention, and this is coming from a non-ego place, this is why you want to do this with precision, is to actually do the walk. It's not right now. Of course, you want to have the entrepreneurship and have some profits. So there's nothing wrong because people have to pay for their bills. However, you want to have the infrastructure of the gift component, give it forward together. That is the foundational thinking of your vision and company. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I started with that in mind and then developed the business model, so to speak, knowing that right now, as integrated as gift is into my business, which it is, it's still in its infancy because I would love to get it to a place where it's actually an enterprise in and of itself, a social enterprise in and of itself, maybe working with underprivileged youth to teach them about business skills while teaching them how to make jewelry or teaching them something. But I want there to be a more active ingredient in this. And so that's kind of a goal I have down the road because I'm not there yet. But what I am doing right now, I'm proud of because I've been doing it since the beginning. And it's evolving, which is great.
So from what I'm just hearing you say, I had an idea that I'm going to just say right here because I think it's so important to set intention. So interesting enough, the Genetiki bracelet ended up birthing the Aliki One. And this is where I'm so grateful to you, Denise, because you had met Lama Tenzin. You trusted my word because I've been to India. I've met the kids. And I know that when Lama was blessing sort of the mission and the vision. And I know the other important thing for people to remember is that when Denise makes these bracelets, they do this up at Esalen. There's a spiritual place called Esalen where they grow the food and everything organic right there. And people aren't supposed to show up to crop the fields if they're not feeling well. And I know Denise has told me that she puts her own love and infuses love into each of her bracelets because she makes sure she's in the best mental state or mental health or positive vibration she can be in when she's creating these as well.
Yeah, I never want to be making these when I'm in a bad mood. Or what I'll do is I'll start making a different bracelet that's, you know, either mine or something random. And inevitably, I end up being in a good mood. Like actually making the bracelets does put me in a good mood too. But I won't make a bracelet that I'm gifting to someone else or making for sale or whatever if I'm in a bad mood. I just doesn't feel right to me. But, you know, the other thing, Denise, that created our synchronicity was right around the time you went to India. I was going to Nepal on a humanitarian leadership effort. And we went up into the mountains in Nepal, where villages are that have not really seen a lot of Western mindset or anything. I mean, they didn't even have a road to this village that we went to, and we had to walk half the way, and the Jeeps couldn't get through. So this local guy with one truck that goes back and forth carried us in. It was quite an excursion and an experience and an adventure. So I was in the mindset that you ended up in too by going to India. Like, you had kind of similar experiences in terms of people and culture and this, you know, alternate lifestyle and just seeing how people live and what their cultural nuances are and heritage is in a very, very different part of the world.
I think one of the kind of wish lists and dreams, because I know each of your pieces of your jewelry line, and I know we talked about a leaky one, but there's other branches and other gift people that you do. I don't know if you want to list those too. That would be great. And then I've got another idea as well.
Yeah, sure. The Aligi One collection benefits Lama Tenzin's work. My Aligi Originals collections benefits the Environmental Charter School, who that has a Bridging the Gap scholarship. And so we're entering into a partnership on that. And then the last one is my Aligi Surf collection that benefits the local Manhattan Beach Roundhouse Aquarium, which is just this little darling space in the world that teaches environmental literacy and brings starfish on field trips to inner city kids that have never been to the beach, and gets people on field trips coming to the beach who have never been to the beach. And they're just a little gem down in Manhattan Beach here.
The one thing that I'm listening and very much excited about the synchronicity is that you and I birthed the pieces. So I want to say thank you, because I got to have my creative, because I would say, I'm laughing, I had the figures, but that,
oh yeah,
you and I together co-created this Aligi One line with the vision of the first piece that the first one was Genetiki based on my Dr. Denise logo, but then the vision and mission and supporting Lama Tenzin's mission and who he represents and the way he champions women's rights. Siban was the very first piece that we designed together, and we went back and forth, and I really enjoyed the creative process, you letting me know like what it's like with working with people back in Greece. So I felt like the vibrational frequency of your ancestry was included, the Greek knowledge and wisdoms infused into this jewelry, and then the spirit of what you've always believed in with women and what I do. In fact, it's ironic that we're doing this show right after I just helped design. I never thought as a psychiatrist, I would be asked to help a campaign for women's empowerment and challenges with a lingerie company. And so I was so flattered in the sense, I'm like, how is that going to happen? And so it's all about women's empowerment. And so the challenges I did with this Alomi lingerie was all based that I wrote, that I gave them like 45 ideas and they picked 30 challenges. And it's all based on awareness, self-love, and altruism. And I think that your collective mind, my collective mind, Lama Tenzin's collective mind, it's a vehicle. Like, I look at these bracelets, it's not only a beautiful piece of jewelry, but it stands for something. Like, when I put my bracelets on and I look at Siban, or I look at, can you pronounce the one I always don't pronounce right? Yes.
Cardia.
One thing about me.
The heart
one. Can you say it one more time?
The heart one.
Cardia.
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 See, I need, just so you know, I will not be saying that when we're out. But the meaning of it, though, the whole meaning of it, I helped with you. Like, I don't know how to say the Greek, but the meaning. Can you read that one for everyone?
Oh, yeah. Kardia means the heart or unity of heart. And the intention is building awareness to the likeness of the heart spirit, shining light on shared experiences of love, honoring individuality and togetherness as the center to belonging and hope.
And so with humility and gratitude, I think that the messages of the bracelets are so much bigger. So they're there, they're real, they're concrete, they're tangible, they're beautiful. And I think what you and I've discussed, you know, how there's book clubs in different towns and, like, you know, different types of, you know, there can be, you and I both love the word inspire. And I use that as one of my hashtags, inspire all, that when individuals thrive, we all thrive. Mm. And I think when I was hearing about the Roundtable Aquarium, or when Lama Tenzin comes, and if I have, you know, another smaller Compassion in Action, we can feature the bracelets. So there's really, like, you could give a talk about leadership. So I'm thinking that with all of your knowledge and wisdom and our work that we've done where you've invited me to Pepperdine, there's the vehicle for workshops and symposiums that cover topics. And then your Aliki designs can be there. And it's not that they're not very important and that the jewelry isn't fantastic, but I think the bridge would be the bridge discussions, that these pieces of jewelry can empower others.
For sure. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
And so that's probably, I mean, I just see your mindset is like each step, just like Lama Tenzin did with building his vision and being able to get the money, like budget, business. It seems like you're doing that from ground zero with your business model for social change with your company.
Yeah, I'm really trying to be very mindful and purposeful about, you know, how I spend the money, where I make my investments, what I can feasibly do now versus what I need to, you know, have as a goal, a stretch goal for the long term, rather than trying to do it all right now. I think it's better to be realistic about what's possible and then keep pushing myself and striving for that forward momentum.
And right here, you know, with this, what would be the, was there a tip or information or anything that you'd want to give out with from everything we've just discussed? Is there anything that you want to leave us with today?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. There's a lot there's a lot of different directions I could go in there. I'll leave you with my favorite quote. My favorite quote is from an ancient Greek philosopher, that a society grows great when old people plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit under. And I love that quote because it just conveys in a very unassuming but poignant way at the same time that we all have a responsibility to not only live our lives and live them fully and live them with richness as individuals, but also we have a responsibility to leave something behind that's going to keep society growing, keep humanity thriving.
Thank you. That's great. So can you just say that quote one more time?
Oh, a society grows great when old people plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit under.
So how can people find you and check out what you're up to?
Oh, yeah. Good question. So I have a website for my organizational development models. It's called itcsr.com, itcsr.com. My website for my jewelry is alikidesigns.com, and that's Aliki designs with an S.com. And I'm on Instagram as well under Aliki Designs. And I'm on Facebook under Aliki Designs. And there's multiple messaging opportunities through all of that and through my website. So I think that through the power of the World Wide Web and social media, you can find me great. Pretty easily.
Well, I can't. I just want to, with a big smile, say thank you and thanks for being on the show. And we'll have you back. We'll maybe we can do a check-in, you know, after a couple months, and we can see how everything's going and how things are evolving. We'd love to have you back on the show.
I would love that. And thank you for inviting me and for giving me this space and energy and for the conversation.
Bye. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening.
Bye.